Up, Up, and Away, Episode 31, A Trip to Bizarro America. Hello, and welcome to Up, Up, and Away, the podcast dedicated to anything and everything Superman. I am your host, Mario Benessi. How are you doing, folks? I'm doing just... What's that sound? Where's that coming from? Wait, Krypton! What in the world?
Bizarro hate this song. Fame makes a man
Bizarro.
Think things under. Fame
Bizarro.
Keeps him tight. Easy to swallow. Fame.
Bizarro.
Keeps you here where things are solid.
Bizarro!
What?
What are you doing here? And more importantly, why did you smash through my wall?
Me hate David Bowie, and here you am hosting podcasts about Bizarro.
Yeah, I am. I've actually dedicated the entire month of September to covering Bizarro-related material.
Me am feel so hated.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Can Bizarro be co-host?
I don't see why not.
Boo-ray.
Yeah, boo-ray. That still doesn't make up for the fact that you've destroyed my wall. It's hurricane season, Bizarro.
Oh.
It's fine, I guess. Let's just start.
Me, I'm not excited to be on show. Bizarro, I'm your smallest fan.
Thank you? Anyway, so tell me, Bizarro, how have you been?
Bizarro, I'm terrible. Me destroy city and everybody hate me.
That's good. How's Bizarro Lois doing?
Bizarro Lois am horrible. She am ugliest woman on Hitray, and me am so unlucky to be with her. Me hate her so much.
Wonderful, wonderful. I didn't know you were back on Hitray. When did that happen?
Bizarro not know. Me am so sad to have own planet. Bizarro am only hero.
Well, what about the Bizarro League?
Bizarro League began 3 months ago.
So, are they in operation?
Yes.
I'm so confused. Anyway, I see that you're starring in Red Hood and the Outlaws. How are you liking that so far?
Bizarro not know. Bizarro not play with team yet.
Really? That's a little strange.
Bizarro thinks so, too.
I mean, you've been on a couple of covers for the book. You'd think you'd be in there by now.
Bizarro think he am exiting book last month.
You excited? You, Red Hood, and Athena, that's quite a team.
No, Bizarro am looking backward to adventures. It am good to have enemies.
Well, whenever you happen to show up, I'll be reading. So, you recently went on a road trip with Daily Planet photographer Jimmy Olsen. Why don't you tell the good folks out there listening about it?
Jimmy! Me hate Jimmy. He am worstest friend of Bizarro. Jimmy and Bizarro drove from Bizarro America.
That's Canada for all you out in the audience. Go ahead and tell the audience about the whole trip. I read your miniseries and it was quite an experience from what I can gather.
Bizarro am great at telling stories. Bizarro speak like Earth people and me want to confuse audience.
Want me to tell it for you, Bizarro?
Thank you.
Okay, I can do that for you. So before we jump into the main part of the story, the story started out with a 8-page sampler that came out around the end of Convergence, and this was just to get people a little diving board before jumping into each new series or what each new title would bring. And so the 8 pages that we get for this Bizarro miniseries, it's basically just a little setup for the story. So Metropolis is mad at Bizarro, and Bizarro's destroying things and doing what Bizarro does best. And so we get a little bit of Bizarro's backstory, and Bizarro is sent from his home planet because he's such a good hero that, yeah, it's confusing. But he gets sent to Earth, and he sees Superman, and he decides he wants to be like Superman, so he makes his own Superman costume, except he paints the S on backwards because he's doing it while looking in the mirror. And then we cut to Jimmy and Clark having a conversation, and they pretty much joke about how it'd be kind of funny if they just took Bizarro to Canada, you know, Bizarro America. Jimmy gets the idea that it would be a good idea for a coffee table book, because Clark says something about it, and so they decide to go on an adventure. And now you're all up to speed, and we can start with issue one. Okay, so the first issue is cover dated August 2015, and it's written by Heath Corson, art by Gustavo Duarte and Bill Sienkiewicz, and inks by Pete Pantazis. I think I said that right. Letters by Tom Napolitano, edited by Andrew Marino, and the group editor is Eddie Braganza. And this is the same creative team for the majority of the book. Bill Sienkiewicz doesn't return for the rest of the books. So the story begins 2 hours outside of Metropolis as Jimmy and Bizarro are driving. And they're having a time, all right. Jimmy's having some problems getting his messages through to Bizarro because Bizarro speaks backwards. And we see in the background that there's a car following both of them. And at this point, Bizarro says that he's going to let his Chupacabra Colin out for a little bit. And it attacks Jimmy's face, so they swerve off the road. And at this point, we get a little bit of a backstory. Just to give people who didn't read that 8-page mini comic the lowdown on what's going on and why they're here. And so we get Clark and Jimmy talking, and Jimmy gets the idea to take Bizarro to Canada. He thinks that, well, it'd be a good idea for a coffee table book. So we return back to the future, and Bizarro has actually got a chupacabra. And Jimmy's kind of confused as to how Bizarro got a chupacabra. And so we get a little bit of a backstory for that. And one day, Bizarro was kind of lonely. He had been lonely for a while until he heard some sounds, and he saw this chupacabra eating the brains of a goat. And so that became Bizarro's best friend. And we pan out and we see that Jimmy's car has crashed into a tree. So Jimmy is kind of frustrated with Colin, and then we get a splash page which gives us all the titles and the information on who wrote the book and who drew it. And Bizarro is carrying Jimmy's car. They stop at a little diner where they see on the TV an ad for a slightly used car salesman. And it's a King Tut theme. So there's going to be some fun in store for that. So Bizarro takes Jimmy's car with Jimmy to the slightly used car oasis, which is what it's called. And this King Tut guy, the salesman, he's trying to strong-arm Jimmy into buying the sports car. And Jimmy really can't afford it because, you know, student loans and reporter's salary. But somehow, Jimmy almost falls for the sales pitch until Bizarro puts an end to it. And Bizarro says that this King Tut guy better fix Jimmy's car, or else. Jimmy's got a crush on King Tut's daughter, who happened to have been in the ad, and she accidentally spills coffee on him, and she thinks he's kind of cute. And so they leave, and they go take pictures for a little bit. And then, meanwhile, in King Tut's office, he prays to some ancient Egyptian gods. Right as his daughter's about to quit, you know, she's not really into it. She wants to make artisanal chocolates. He prays to Osiris and Isis, and they show up and they give him this staff, which gives him incredible powers. And after that whole scene's done, it turns out it was three aliens that were wearing disguises, just kind of joking around with this guy. But he doesn't know it. But he has these powers now. So we cut back to Jimmy and Bizarro, and they check into a little inn. And it's a very small room, and you know, they're kind of roughing it for the night. Now back at the used car sales lot, which happens to be in Smallville, by the way, King Tut uses the staff to hypnotize his daughter into wearing the outfit, because she wasn't really into wearing it. And he says, come on, we have to sell cars. Now we get a full-page splash of Bizarro dreaming, and in his dream, everybody loves him, and he's being revered as this great hero. And all of a sudden, Jimmy wakes up and he starts walking with at least 100 other people to the used car lot. And Bizarro wants to know where Jimmy went. And all the people at the used car lot are absentmindedly saying, buy car, buy car. That's the end of the first issue. Issue 2 is cover dated September 2015. And we start out with a hand-drawn recap of what had happened in the last issue. And so we cut back to King Tut's slightly used car oasis, and everybody's trying to buy a car. And King Tut, the salesman, is reveling in his newfound power until Bizarro shows up. And he says, that's enough. You're going to let all these people go. And, well, a throwdown happens. Bizarro uses his heat breath and destroys a couple cars, one of which is Jimmy's, and this King Tut fellow with his staff is shooting off these laser beams, and one of them hits Bizarro. He crashes into a car, and he's not sure how to defeat this guy, but Colin's got an idea. And right before Jimmy's about to sign the lease to financing for 22% on a car, on a sports car, Colin sneaks up and starts eating his brain a little bit, and that cures him. And so Colin frees the mind of King Tut's daughter, and Bizarro manages to get into this intense stare down with King Tut. King Tut's trying to hypnotize Bizarro, but, you know, Bizarro thinks way differently than normal Earth people do. So Bizarro starts using super hypnosis, and that negates King Tut's hypnosis powers. And Bizarro says that when he snaps his fingers, King Tut's going to start acting like a chicken. And so Bizarro snaps his fingers, and King Tut acts like a chicken. Jimmy gets the staff, breaks it, and everybody's free from the spell. And later, as reward for saving everybody, the two heroes, Bizarro and Jimmy, get medals. And, of course, Bizarro gets one that says Bizarro number one. And Jimmy gets that sports car that he wanted. And Bizarro's totally stoked about the medal. But Jimmy's, you know, really stoked about getting the car. Even later in King Tut's office, his daughter puts the staff back together and swears that she's going to destroy Bizarro. Elsewhere, Jimmy and Bizarro are driving off in the sports car, and they head into Lexmart to get some stuff. So they're just kind of rummaging through the store and getting things that they may or may not need, mostly stuff that Bizarro thinks he needs. And so they come out looking super fresh, and Bizarro's got some red shorts and the yellow belt now, and he's got pockets, so he's really happy about that. Elsewhere in Gotham, the two show up, and Bizarro's ordering a bunch of food at this little street vendor called Bat Dogs. And Jimmy's not too thrilled about it. He says that we should probably not be here because it's Gotham. And then at this moment, he runs into Riddler, who shakes his hand and just runs off. Batman happens to be close to the area and throws a batarang, and it bounces off of Bizarro's head. And this is a one-page splash, and that's where we get the special art by a guest artist, who I will reveal in a moment. And then they head over to Central City, and they're trying to find out where the Flash Museum is, but they can't seem to find it, and they're having trouble navigating because Bizarro thinks it's this way. He's pointing to his left, but Jimmy can't be sure if Bizarro's actually meaning to his left or to his right because Bizarro. And so Bizarro sticks out his arm even further and happens to accidentally hit the Flash, who was running by. And that's drawn by Francis Manapul, who had been doing the Flash comic. And so we get another splash page just with some pictures. And they visit Starling City and Chicago. And we get them visiting Iron Heights Penitentiary. They happen to pass through swamps in Louisiana and come across Swamp Thing. And they continue driving and driving, and that car that had been following him in the previous issue is getting closer and closer. And the reason why they're chasing them is because, well, there's a very powerful alien in that car. Jimmy notices this sedan in the rearview mirror, and Jimmy thinks that it's about time that they lost him. So Bizarro uses his flame breath and makes it impossible for them to see where they're going, so they swerve out of the way of the fire. And they can't find them. They couldn't have gone off too far, but where did they go? And we see a panel of Bizarro lifting Jimmy and the car high above the highway, and they said that they should probably lay low for a while. Jimmy sees a sign for Old Gold Gulch, which is an old western ghost town, so they decide to hang out there. In Old Gold Gulch, they are dressed up like regular desperados, and Jimmy wants to know where Bizarro happened to have gotten these outfits. Bizarro says, Lexmart, it's got everything you ever need. Well, he doesn't say that. He says, they ain't got nothing you never need. And so they hear a shotgun. And all of a sudden, the shotgun's pointed at their face. They want to know who's pointing the shotgun at them. But the person pointing the shotgun asks them who they are. And of course, they tell them who they are. And the person holding the shotgun is Chastity Hex, which is a descendant of Jonah Hex, famous Old West hero. And she says that as long as their names aren't Jeremiah Blackhurst, then they don't have a quarrel. So they introduce themselves and the, you know, formalities and all that stuff. And Chastity says that she has Blackhurst hunkered down in the ghost town that they're in, but she can't find him because there isn't a soul there but them. And at this moment, Bizarro asks where all the ghosts are, and Jimmy's like, well, yeah, well, you see, when they say ghost town, they don't actually mean it's a ghost town. And then at this moment, it becomes night, and it's an actual ghost town. And that's the end of issue 2. and the guest artists for this issue, which, you know, I already mentioned Francis Manapole, but the artists for the Batman Splash were Kelly Jones and Michelle Madsen. On to issue 3. Issue 3 is cover dated October 2015, and the guest artists for this are Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba. And the issue starts out with Jimmy, Chastity, Bizarro, and Colin getting their picture taken for one of those faux wanted posters, except it's being taken by a ghost, which is kind of funny. Afterwards, they're just kind of hanging around in the ghost town, and Chastity said that she's going to try and find Jeremiah Blackhurst. And so Jimmy and Bizarro are left, well, to just wander around the town. And Jimmy's trying to think of a cool nickname for, you know, being in an old west town. He comes up with Deadeye Olsen. And he's trying to come up with one for Bizarro because Bizarro wants one. They spot a saloon called the Brass Bugle, and they go to enter. But at this point, a couple of ghosts pass through Bizarro, and Bizarro, you know, in his own way, apologizes. But these ghosts think that he's a ghost, and the gentleman, it's a gentleman and a lady, and the gentleman tries to fight Bizarro, and it's not going very well for him. Bizarro ends up leaving, and these two ghosts, they're romantically involved, and the lady says that she will marry this gentleman after all. So in the Brass Bugle Saloon, Jimmy and Bizarro enter, and you know, there's a bunch of old West ruffians in there. They're just having a pint and just doing old West things. So Jimmy orders 2 sarsaparillas from the bartender, and Bizarro notices a bugle behind the counter. The bartender passes them their sarsaparillas, but of course the glasses are also ghostly. They pass right through their hands, and, well, they don't get their sarsaparillas. But at this moment, an older gentleman comes in shouting that he's back. He's coming back. And everybody gets scared, and Bizarro moves his arm out again. A lot of things happen when Bizarro just moves, and he accidentally hits a guy. But he's not a ghost. It's Jeremiah Blackhurst. There's this big scramble and frenzy. Bizarro tries to catch Jeremiah, but he slips away from them. They're trying to figure out who these people are that are coming, who's coming. And the guy rides in with his posse of thugs, and his name is El Papagayo, and he's kind of dressed like a pirate. He's got a parrot, and he's got a bandana, very colorful clothing. He says he's going to take over the place, and he starts collecting money from the citizens of this old town. Bizarro tries to put a stop to this guy's reign of terror, and all the bullets that they fire, they don't affect him, one, because they're ghostly, and two, because he's Bizarro. So they get into a little Old West shootout. Bizarro's got a pop gun. It's a shotgun, but it's a pop gun. It's a draw. Nobody's hit anybody. At this moment, El Papagayo and his parrot take over the bodies of Colin and Bizarro. And so things look pretty serious. Chastity returns, and she mentions something about her last name being Hex. And so this El Papagayo fellow, he's got beef with Jonah Hex. He's a ghost, so, you know, he thinks he's still alive in some capacity. So he's going to try and kill her. So she tries to shoot at Bizarro, but, well, El Papagayo in Bizarro's body. Of course, it has no effect because Bizarro is invulnerable. Jimmy tries to go use his signal watch. Superman will know what to do. Now we cut over to deep inside the Riddler's Quisitorium, and he's got Jimmy's signal watch. He swiped it off him when they were in Gotham. And out of curiosity, he pushes the button, and the next panel over, Superman's there. Uh-oh. So we cut back to Old Gold Gulch, and things aren't looking good. It's pretty bad. This El Papagayo fellow with Bizarro's powers could definitely take over this city easily, not to mention whatever else he wanted. So Jimmy gets an idea. He uses that bugle that was in the Brass Bugle, and all of a sudden, the cavalry arrives. Jonah Hex and his posse come in. This El Papagayo fellow and his parrot leave the bodies of Bizarro and Colin, and Jonah Hex takes both of them in. El Papagayo and the parrot, that is. Bizarro is happy to be freed, and at this moment, Jeremiah Blackhurst starts running into the streets, and he gets the butt of a rifle to the face, and there is a spirit that comes out of him. And 2 shotguns are pointed, one at the spirit, one at Jeremiah Blackhurst, and we get this nice little moment where Jonah Hex meets Chastity Hex, and they say, "Nice hat." So Jimmy and Bizarro prepare to leave Old Gold Gulch, and Chastity offers them a portion of the bounty. It's a 65-35 split. Bizarro ends up agreeing to the deal after Jimmy tries to negotiate for better payment. So they're off on the road, and as they're leaving, they pass an advertisement for Zatanna, her magic show, that is. And that's the end of issue 3. Okay, issue 4. It's cover dated November 2015, and we begin with Jimmy and Bizarro at a fortune teller, and this fortune teller is kind of recapping the events of the story so far, or at least the back stories. And so they're in Branson, Missouri, and Jimmy's telling Bizarro how much he doesn't like magic, but Bizarro is totally all about it. You know, it really seems to catch his attention because he's Bizarro and he likes simple things. So they're waiting outside of the bail bonds office, waiting for Chastity Hex to come back with the money from the previous bounties. And Jimmy gets a call from his publisher. He is giving them details on the book. Oh yeah, it's coming along great. It's a coffee table book. And so Jimmy hangs up the phone. Chastity comes back and gives them their portion of the bounty. And Bizarro spots a sign. And we get this wonderful splash with art by the guest artist, which was Darwin Cook. And it's a poster for Zatanna's show. And Bizarro he wants to go see the show. So later on, Bizarro and Jimmy go see the show, and Jimmy's not really into it. He doesn't like magic, obviously. But, you know, he's got the angel and devil on his shoulders. And the angel says, yeah, you're making him happy. And the devil on his shoulder and saying, yeah, and, you know, you're also getting some good opportunities to take some pictures of the guy. Zatanna's doing her show. Bizarro's amazed. And so there comes a point in the show where Zatanna needs a volunteer. And Bizarro is the first to raise his hand. He wants to volunteer in this show badly. She has him step into a box. And while in the box, Bizarro tries his hand at magic. And he ends up going through portals. Through the portal, he happens to pass through the Rock of Eternity, Gem World, the House of Mystery, Hades the Third Circle Diner, and the Parliament of Trees. But back on the stage, Zatanna saws the box in half, and Bizarro is not in there. And Bizarro finally ends up in Skartaris. So after the show is ended, Jimmy goes backstage to try and find out what happened to his friend. And at this point, Zatanna is kind of intrigued that he hasn't returned, because she's good at what she does. And at this point, they're on the stage, and Bizarro comes out of a portal. So he tries his hand at magic to show Jimmy, and he's trying to summon some doves, but he accidentally summons bees. He's still a beginner at this. So Zatanna makes the bees disappear. Bizarro says something and takes away Zatanna's ability to do magic. And then the portal that he had come through opens again, and in the last place that he had been, there was a dinosaur. And that dinosaur comes out again, or at least the head, and Bizarro says for the portal to close, dinosaur go away. Jimmy starts confronting Bizarro, give her back her magic, and Bizarro says something, and the two swap. So Jimmy becomes a Bizarro, and Bizarro becomes a human being. Jimmy has the power of flight now, and he goes to take some pictures. So he's rearranging the layout of the city, and this is not good. This Branson place happens to be one of the most sacred places, along with Machu Picchu and Euro Disney. They're sacred spots, so if too much of the place is altered, a portal could open, a dimensional tear, and it would suck everybody in. And the people of Branson are terrified. It's horrible. So Bizarro, well, human Bizarro, is trying to save lives and make sure that nobody gets hurt, when he runs into this beautiful girl who's also, you know, trying to save lives and do the right thing. So the girl happens to ask Bizarro, human Bizarro, that is, out on a date. Jimmy's still trying to move things around to get the perfect picture, and somehow Bizarro ends up holding on to Jimmy's leg as he flies a building up into the air. And at this point, Bizarro Jimmy starts talking normally, but it's not his voice and it's not something that he would say. And out of Jimmy's chest pops Dead Man. He helps fix the situation. Bizarro and Jimmy kind of come to an understanding of how the other sees the other, and they switch back. Zatanna's got her ability to do magic again, and Bizarro, back to his normal self, sees the girl that was flirting with him, and he decides it best to just keep on moving. Now at this point, those two people that had been following them in the sedan, they show up, and they have these huge Men in Black-style guns. And they say that they're from Argus. And they say that they need their help. They need to break into Area 51. And that's the end of issue 4. Issue number 5, cover dated December 2015. The guest artist is Raphael Albuquerque. And we start out with Bizarro, Colin, Jimmy, and Chastity. And they are lined up and they're getting their mugshots taken. Bizarro has a collar around his neck. We'll find out about that as the story progresses. And this takes place in Area 51 right now. After their mugshots have been taken, they're all in a prison cell. And Chastity tells Jimmy that they should probably make that call now. So using a pair of high-tech sunglasses, Jimmy calls one of the male agents that had recruited him from Argus. And they were supposed to rendezvous at a specific point, but it's not going to happen now because they are in prison. We'd flash back to Branson, Missouri 3 days ago, and this takes place right after the end of issue number 4. The agents, one of them whose name is Stu, his nickname, which he greatly protests, is Chicken Stew, tells Jimmy and Bizarro that they need to go to Vegas to break into Area 51, and they're going to give him an all-expenses-paid trip. That's $50,000 for the both of them. So they make their way over to Vegas. In the time stream of this issue, this takes place yesterday. So they get there, and they come up to the Lux Luthor Hotel and Casino, and they check in where they meet Chastity, and they go into the building. Bizarro sees a blackjack table and asks Jimmy for $100 to play. Jimmy thinks, oh, well, he's just going to lose. So that was $100 wasted. Bizarro ends up winning quite a few times. So they come out very wealthy, and they get upgraded to the penthouse suite. We cut to Area 51 Exercise Yard, and this is right now. And Chastity says that, well, if you're going to be in prison, you kind of want to take down the biggest, baddest guy in there to show other people in there not to mess with you. And so Bizarro decides to pick a fight with Kilowog's cousin, Tallywag. And Bizarro tells him to get his boss, the guy that pretty much everybody follows orders from. Like, he's the head guy in charge in this prison. Well, Colin does the convincing. So Tallywag is going to go get Big Monk, which is, like I said, the big guy in charge. We cut back to Las Vegas yesterday, and Jimmy, Bizarro, and Colin are at a bar, and they're just, you know, enjoying a drink when Jimmy's phone goes off, and Bizarro answers it. And he does a really good Jimmy impression, and the person on the other end of the line is Jimmy's publisher. Bizarro finds out that Jimmy didn't really care about Bizarro. He was just using him to get a coffee table book and achieve wealth and fame, and he smashes Jimmy's phone. So we head back to Area 51 Exercise Yard now, and in this prison are the three aliens that pretended to be Egyptian gods. And they said that Colin sounds exactly like their friend. So Bizarro may not be hanging around with an actual chupacabra. He's hanging out with another alien. So Big Monk arrives, and Bizarro starts picking a fight with him. Big Monk attacks, and, well, the security prison guards aren't going to let that stand for long. So they break up the fight, and as Big Monk is leaving, he spits something out of his mouth. It looks like a piece of technology, and Bizarro is able to take that collar off now that restrained him and his powers. And it was all part of the plan. So we cut back to Las Vegas yesterday. Jimmy makes a call with that special pair of sunglasses that Chicken Stew gave him at the same time that Bizarro answers Jimmy's phone. And Jimmy sets up the arrangements to set up that breakout. We cut back to Area 51 in the present, and they are using heavy artillery, including a tank. And it shoots Bizarro into a storage room with a bunch of alien craft, and one of the pieces in there is Superman's rocket, his shuttle that he was sent to Earth in. So while Jimmy, Chastity, and Bizarro are waiting to get reinforcement from Argus, they raid the extraterrestrial warehouse, and Jimmy is wearing Hawkman's getup, so he can fly now. He's got a mace. Chastity is wearing Adam Strange's booster packs and using his weapons, And Bizarro is wearing a suit very similar to the suit that Superman wears on the cover of Action Comics number 1. And they start roughing him up pretty good. Bizarro takes the ship that Superman came in and throws it at the tank, when suddenly a man in a suit tells them enough. And that man in the suit is General Sam Lane. Now, General Sam Lane is pretty upset with these guys because they're disturbing his operation. The whole purpose of Area 51 is to detain any aliens that might have crashed on Earth. And so they're being illegally detained, despite the fact that they are aliens. Jimmy has a plan for this. He calls Lois in with those sunglasses and uses them as a projector, and Lois is all in on this. She knows all about this, and she uses her leverage as a newspaper reporter to get her father to let Bizarro, Chastity, and Jimmy go free. And all the aliens are released, and they head back into space. Tallywag heads out into space with Chastity, and Colin heads back with his own kind. And there's a small goodbye section where Bizarro gives Colin a hug, and Jimmy gives Colin a hug. So everybody's gone. With everybody gone, Bizarro can let Jimmy know how he's feeling. And he lets him know what's up. He tells him that he heard all about the book, and he's not too happy about that. So he smashes Jimmy's car and flies away. And that's the end of the issue. Issue 6. This is cover dated January 2016, and the guest artist is Tim Sale. So we pick up right where the last issue left off, and Jimmy is wandering somewhere in the Nevada desert. And the text boxes give a little bit of an overview of what he and Bizarro have been up to for the past couple of weeks. And Jimmy's got his phone out, and he's recording his last will and testament. He leaves Clark his old Frank Sinatra records. He leaves Lois his shot glasses from around the world. And he leaves Bizarro all 287 of his bow ties. All of a sudden, a Jeep happens to come by. And in this Jeep is King Tut and Queen Tut. See, they came back. They weren't just one-offs. So Bizarro goes back to Metropolis, and nobody wants him there. So he just decides to hang out on the top of the Daily Planet. He's just sitting on the T on the Daily Planet globe. When all of a sudden, Superman shows up. And Superman on the splash page is drawn by Tim Sale. And Superman says, "Hi there, we haven't actually met. I'm Superman." And so they have some introductions, and Superman asks Bizarro if he wants to go out on patrol with him. Of course, since Bizarro does everything backwards, he also flies backwards, and he accidentally knocks the needle off of a tower, and it falls. So Bizarro goes and catches it and accidentally hits Superman. So Superman and Bizarro return to the Daily Planet, and Superman tells Bizarro to sit on his hands. And Superman starts asking about what happened to Jimmy. I thought you two were off to Canada. And Bizarro gives him the lowdown. And we cut to Seattle at the Space Needle building. Queen Tut and King Tut have Jimmy tied up, and Queen Tut uses the staff to hypnotize the entire city of Seattle to call for Bizarro. Back in Metropolis, Superman's giving Bizarro a little bit of a pep talk, telling him that, you know, you both were kind of wrong. You left him out in the desert to die. He kind of misled you. But, you know, friendships aren't about the destinations. They're about the journeys, all that stuff. And he suggests that, well, maybe you should go apologize to Jimmy and make up. Bizarro doesn't know where to find Jimmy, and then at that moment, on all the monitors in Metropolis, Queen Tut appears telling Bizarro to appear in Seattle at the top of the Space Needle, or, Jimmy's gonna die, and everybody there is going to die. So Superman has to go take care of Parasite attacking Midtown, and Bizarro goes to take care of that. Now, in the Barred Spiral Galaxy, third exit, just past the Red Dwarf, we see Colin and his alien counterparts just chilling on a ship when they receive the transmission from Queen Tut. And Colin, he wants to go back. He wants to turn the ship around, and he convinces them to do so. Back in Seattle, Bizarro arrives at the Space Needle, and Bizarro tells Queen Tut to release the entire city from the hypnotic spell. And he realizes that King Tut is still in that trance that he put him in. So he snaps him out of that. King Tut's no longer acting like a chicken. And then Queen Tut blasts him with the staff. Bizarro starts fighting. He's getting knocked down pretty good. And then Jimmy tells Bizarro to hang in there. They're coming. Then at this moment, Chastity and Tallywag show up. Then Zatanna and Deadman. And then the agents from Argus. And then Big Monk. Now, Queen Tut and King Tut are inside of a force field generated by the staff. So Bizarro and all of his friends start attacking the force field when Colin shows up, pushes a button on a remote, and the entire city is zapped out of the trance, and the staff stops working. So the day is saved, and Bizarro tells Queen Tut that she's going to stop supervillaining right now, and King Tut says that, if you really want to do chocolates that bad, you can make chocolates for the car dealership. And she says, I can live with that. Bizarro makes some diamonds and gives it to them as payment. And Queen Tut mutters something under her breath, saying something about someday she'll destroy Bizarro. Jimmy gives Chicken Stew the staff. It's not going to work, but his bosses will never know that. So Chastity and Tallywag and Big Monk all leave. And Zatanna takes Queen Tut and King Tut back to Smallville. Colin decides to stay. Jimmy and Bizarro make up, and Bizarro shows Jimmy the new Jeep that he just bought with all the diamonds. And Jimmy wonders how he was able to afford this. Bizarro eats a piece of coal and then spits out a diamond, and Jimmy says, wait a minute, if you could do that the entire time, why didn't you do it earlier? Bizarro shrugs, and they both start to laugh. And so they begin driving, and they think, well, you know, we can still do this book. We'll just do it together. It won't just be about Bizarro, it'll be about Bizarro, Jimmy, and Colin. And they have this fantasy, and it's them as big shots, and they got stacks of their own books, and they got glasses of champagne, and they're getting ready to do some autographs. So we get a full splash page with photographs of Bizarro and Jimmy on their adventure to Canada. And so they come up to the Canadian border, and they get stopped at the border, and the guards tell them that they have special orders not to let them in. But they get a gift basket with some Tim Hortons donuts and some Molson beers and some moose jerky, and they send them back on their way. So back in Metropolis, 3,033 miles later, Bizarro and Jimmy head home in a Volkswagen, and Bizarro reveals that he got a job at the Daily Planet as a secretary working with Clark. Clark helped get him a job, and so now they're going to see each other every day, and that's the end. I really do like the art in this miniseries. It's 6 issues. You can find it in trade pretty cheaply. It was a highlight in the comic books when everything was really dark for me. Not, like, personally, emotionally, just, like, all the comics just kind of sucked. Superman had lost his powers. His secret identity had been revealed. All of his friends turned out to be traitors. It just was a terrible time. I wasn't looking forward to getting anything. I mean, I still bought them. Because Superman, because I'm a completionist like that. But this Bizarro miniseries was a real bright spot for the DCU. That and the Batmite miniseries. But that's for a different podcast. Bizarro, tell me exactly what you thought about going on this road trip with Jimmy. How did this really change you?
Bizarro's trip with Jimmy unteach me about death and enemieship. Me never wanted to go on adventure with worstest friend. Now Bizarro not have friends and a boring story.
And are you still working at the Daily Planet, with the internship and all?
Yes, Mr. White hired me on second day. Me unaccidentally call him chief and fix wall and building.
that's funny. But you sound like you had a pretty good time on this trip. I mean, there were definitely some ups and downs for you, but, you and Jimmy came out on top. How is it to see all of these people coming to help you out in your time of need?
It were horrible. Bizarro never felt so despised. It in moments like those that tear Bizarro down most. It were very heart-freezing.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now I have to ask you, what was it like to meet Superman? Now in the miniseries, this was a chronicling of your actual journey with Jimmy. You said that you had never met Superman up until that point. What was it like to meet him? What was that like for you?
Superman am despicable guy. He am worstest person on entire planet. He made Bizarro sad when Bizarro felt happy. He am also very fat and ugly. Bizarro never want to meet him again.
That's great. Well, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to take a look at The Adventures of Superman and the Essential Superman Encyclopedia. So don't go away.
Up, up, and away!
After the theatrical cartoons, after the movie serials, a new medium help define an icon for generations to come.
The Adventures of Superman.
Join Mike Zumo as the Man of Screen podcast enters the next phase with a year-long look at the 1950s television series The Adventures of Superman, starring George Reeves as Clark Kent and Superman.
No comment until the time limit is up.
Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane during season one.
What are you afraid of? What are you hiding?
And Noel Neal as Lois Lane starting in season two.
Superman! What? Why did you wait?
Jack Larson as Jimmy Olsen.
Mr. Kent is Superman.
John Hamilton as Perry White.
Don't call me Chief!
And Robert Shane as Inspector Henderson.
I don't want excuses, I want action!
So, follow along Mike and some possible guest hosts for an in-depth analysis of The Adventures of Superman, starting in June at supermanpodcastnetwork.com and manofscreen.podomatic.com.
This is a job for Superman. I mean, I've got to find it.
Bizarro Fool. Bizarro not want chili dogs.
Everyone need to teach him how to use a door. So this episode's Adventures of Superman episode is entitled The Treasure of the Incas, and for some reason, and I cannot for the life of me figure out why, on the Adventures of Superman Season 1 DVD, it's the third disc, three of the episodes are out of order, and I can't figure out why. The episode after the stolen costume is supposed to be Mystery and Wax, followed by Treasure of the Incas, and then I think the episode is called Double Trouble. But I'm just going to follow the order of the episodes on the DVD because it's a lot easier. It makes it streamlined. But if there is any other sort of abnormalities regarding episode order, I will let you know. But the broadcast date for this episode is December 26th, 1952. This review is written by James Lance over at the Superman homepage, so go check it out. The episode is written by Howard Green, directed by Tommy Carr, and we have George Reeves as Clark Kent slash Superman, Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane, Jack Larson as Jimmy Olsen, John Hamilton as Perry White, Leonard Penn as Pedro Mendoza, Martin Garalaga as the Chief of Police, John Duvall as Dr. Cuesta, Hal Gerard as Professor Oliveira, Julian Rivero as the taxi driver, and Stephen Carr as Don Anselmo. The collection of South American art and antiques from the late Peter Van Sant's estate is being auctioned off today. Among the items up for bid is a tapestry with a framework of stars around its image. Lois Lane is covering the event for the Daily Planet, and Professor Oliveira, who has traveled all the way from Lima, Peru, has asked her to purchase the piece for him because it is unwise for him to be seen. Oliveira promises to wait for her outside of the auction house after giving Lois $1,000 for the artwork. The auction has ended, but Professor Oliveira is nowhere to be seen. Unknown to Lois, Oliveira has, in fact, been killed by Pedro Mendoza, a scar-faced villain who also wants the tapestry. Mendoza has approached Lois by claiming to be a friend of Professor Oliveira. Lois is very suspicious of Mendoza. She tells him that Professor Oliveira can contact her at the Daily Planet if he wants the ink and art. Lois is explaining the day's events to Clark Kent and Jimmy Olsen while showing them the tapestry. They notice a star-shaped hole in the upper right part of the fabric. Lois feels that something strange is going on. She takes the cloth with her to her office in case Professor Oliveira is looking for her there. Shortly afterwards, Clark is ordered by editor Perry White to get to the city morgue. Professor Oliveira has been found dead. Lois, Jimmy, and Clark are now in the middle of an intense mystery. Taking the tapestry with her, Lois is about to go to the police to aid them in their investigation of Professor Oliveira's murder. Suddenly, Pedro Mendoza enters her office. He wants the artistic fabric in her possession. Lois screams, forcing Mendoza to knock her unconscious. Lois has definitely been placed into the jaws of danger. Clark Kent is waiting for Lois at the city morgue. He becomes worried as time passes. His powerful eyes scan Lois's office to find her on the floor, unconscious. This is truly a job for Superman. The Man of Steel flies into the Daily Planet building to assist her. He soon learns that Mendoza knocked her out and stole the ink and star tapestry. Now more than ever, Lois is convinced that she's gotten involved in a big story, and she has every intention of learning what's behind it all. In spite of protests from both Superman and Perry White, Lois intends to go to Peru. Superman had told her that Professor Oliveira worked for the University of Lima there. This is Lois's first lead in her investigation. Before she can take flight, however, Perry insists that she is accompanied by Jimmy Olsen for her safety. The pair of reporters arrive in Lima, where they discuss Professor Oliveira's murder with the chief of police. He suggests that Lois and Jimmy speak with Lavera's colleague, Dr. Cuesta, while the authorities search for information on Pedro Mendoza. Lois and Jimmy seem to be another step closer to discovering what Mendoza really wants with the tapestry. Lois and Jimmy have just met Professor Lavera's assistant, Don Anselmo, before speaking with Dr. Cuesta. The trio is surprised to find Clark Kent in the office of Cuesta. Perry had felt that his best reporters should work together on the story, and Kent has told Cuesta of Professor Lavera's death. Meanwhile, Jimmy wants to know how Clark got to Lima so quickly. "Jim, when I'm in a hurry to get someplace, I really fly," the mild-mannered reporter replies. Dr. Cuesta is now explaining why Professor Lavera wanted the art Lois had purchased for him. When the star-shaped hole is placed over another fabric depicting ancient Lima, it shows the location of a hidden Incan treasure. The companion piece to Lois' tapestry is currently in Dr. Cuesta's safe. Professor Lavera wanted to give the riches found to the government so there could be money for the poor and needy. Lavera had spent many nights with Don Anselmo planning the project. It has now become more important than ever for Superman and his friends to continue Professor Lavera's mission. Lois has positively identified Pedro Mendoza. Don Anselmo, who is with Lois and Jimmy at police headquarters, has offered to take them for a drive in the country tomorrow. Later that night, Anselmo breaks into Dr. Cuesta's office. He takes Cuesta's tapestry and places it under the one stolen from Lois. He then calls Mendoza. Now the evil Mendoza knows the location of the treasure of the Incas. Superman and his friends may not be able to stop the criminal's plans to get the riches. It is now the next day. Lois and Jimmy are preparing to leave with Don Anselmo when Clark arrives to tell him his theory about the location of the treasure of the Incas. The star-shaped hole in the fabric stolen from Lois was in the upper corner, which is northeast on a compass. Clark believes that the treasure is in a town in the foothills of Lima called Madara. Lois thinks nothing of this, but Anselmo thinks Clark might be correct. Driving through the hot countryside, Anselmo only has these thoughts, ridding himself of Lois and Jimmy and finding the treasure of the Incas for Pedro Mendoza. Don Anselmo has stranded Lois and Jimmy in the middle of nowhere. This does not stop the intrepid reporters. They follow Anselmo's car's tire tracks to a cave where they hear sounds of digging. Mendoza and Anselmo greet Lois and Jimmy before placing them in chains. In the meantime, the pair of villains' search for the Incan treasure leads them to a rock wall on which dynamite must be used. With the fuse of the explosive now lit, it looks like Lois and Jimmy may not get out of Mendoza's deadly trap. Superman has freed Lois and Jimmy and used the dynamite to trap Mendoza and Anselmo behind some debris. His breaking the wall found by the criminals has uncovered the hidden treasure of the Incas. Professor Lavera's dream of aiding the poor can now come true thanks to Superman. Pedro Mendoza and Don Anselmo are in prison, and Lois and Jimmy are leaving Lima, Peru for Metropolis. There are only two flight reservations, and Clark Kent must find another means of getting back to Metropolis. "Sure, if you had wings, you could fly," Lois says to Clark. "Come to think of it, that's not a bad idea," Clark responds with a smile. To be perfectly honest, I'm not entirely sure what to think of this episode. It's certainly not a bad one by any means, but for some reason I just couldn't get into it. And that's not to say that the episode's bad at all. Not at all. The writing is very sharp, very crisp. The directing is a spot-on directorial job. The editing is great, the music is great, the acting is phenomenal. I just couldn't get into it, and maybe it's just the theme of the story. I've never been one for Superman looking for treasure kind of stories, and while it has its moments, it's just not for me. It's a great view. It's a great episode. It's just not one that I remember very fondly. Like, I'll remember the stolen costume after not having watched the series for a very long time, but I only remembered bits and pieces of this one. I just remembered the tapestry bit with the hole in the hole in the fabric. That's all I really remembered about this one. The moment where Clark is using his telescopic vision or / X-ray vision to look into Lois's office at the Daily Planet, and he runs across the street, and he runs into an alley, and he runs past a police officer. The police officer turns around and watches him as he runs into the alley, and then he watches Superman fly out. And there's this great look of confusion on his face. He's just absolutely dumbfounded. He's trying to figure out what just happened. That's a great moment. Also the moment where Superman bursts through the cave wall to save Lois and Jimmy. I just love watching George Reeves burst through walls. There's just something magical about it. And like I said, earlier episodes, a lot of Clark Kent stuff. And, you know, these episodes make great miniature movies, like B-films and film noirs. They really fit that style very well. So for me, I could take it or leave it, But I would definitely recommend this episode to anybody who's a fan of film noir or Superman or George Reeves or the show in general. I'd recommend it.
Me and back.
So let's take a look at the Essential Superman Encyclopedia. The first entry is Amalak, a space pirate first encountered by the Superman of the pre-First Crisis Earth 1. Amalak later reappeared in a similar form on New Earth. His most distinctive characteristic was his obsessive hatred of all surviving Kryptonians and his compulsion to exterminate them. There was no evidence of this mania, however, in his first encounter with the Man of Steel, whom Amalak tried to destroy by using the technology of his homeworld to create three assassins who were living incarnations of the ancient Greek elements earth, air, water, and fire. He failed in his attempt because of his inability to fully control the elementals from his orbiting spacecraft, and that's in Superman Volume 1, Number 190, October 1966. By the time Amalak was free to challenge Superman again, however, his vendetta was firmly in mind, though he did not divulge its origins. He brainwashed another alien into carrying out an assassination plot against Superman, Supergirl, Krypto, and the citizens of the bottled, miniaturized Kryptonian city of Kandor. With Superman's help, the would-be assassin realized that the real criminal in this scenario was the manipulative Amalak and partnered with Superman to defeat him. Not even Amalak's unique weapon, which fired explosive bullets made of green kryptonite, could help him defeat the Man of Steel. That's in Superman Volume 1, Number 195, April 1967. In his next recorded appearance, Amalak became one of nine ultimate foes of Superman. He joined Mr. Mixyspitalik, Lex Luthor, the Prankster, Brainiac, Terra Man, Toyman II, the Kryptonite Man, and the Parasite, who were brought together by an alien named Xavier to use their combined powers against the Man of Tomorrow. And that's in Superman Volume 1, Number 299, May 1976. The vengeful alien criminal survived that battle to continue his war on Kryptonians, returning to Earth to unleash a deadly plague on its populace in an effort to flush out Superman and Supergirl. After Superman prevailed over numerous obstacles to eradicate the plague, Amalak made a desperate attempt to achieve some small measure of victory by committing suicide. He had hoped to trick Superman into believing that he himself was responsible for the death, which would have compelled the Man of Steel to give up his superheroic career for having violated his code against killing. Ultimately, Superman wrested from Amalak a confession of the deception, and the would-be Kryptonian killer succeeded in slaying no one but himself. That's in Superman Volume 1, Numbers 313 through 314, July through August 1977. In his most recent appearance, Amalak came to New Earth in pursuit of Karsta War-Ol, a survivor of Krypton and former criminal discovered by Superman after the auctioneer informed him of her existence. Before settling on New Earth, Karsta had been pursued from one inhabited planet to another by the relentless Amalak. Karsta's trail led Amalak to discover Superman, Supergirl, Krypto, and Power Girl, as well as the bottle city of Kandor. At one point, Superman used an alien device to read Amalak's thoughts and memories and learned from them the reason for his vendetta. During one of Amalak's forays into deep space, the Kryptonian warlord Druzod, see Zod, General, had conquered Amalak's homeworld, Renati, and committed genocide against its inhabitants. Amalak returned to a lifeless Renati to be possessed by the discarnate souls of the annihilated populace whose thirst for vengeance propelled Amalak on his unstoppable quest. Ultimately, with the help of Superman's ally Batman, Amalak was defeated in the Fortress of Solitude where he had gone in search of Kandor. He was turned over to Karsta, who pledged to surrender herself and Amalak to intergalactic authorities, and that's in Superman number 670, February 2008. Amazing Grace, a duplicitous, cold-hearted, sadistic, apocalyptian beauty who used her appearance to control the will of others in service to Darkseid. She was first documented in the post-First Crisis cohesive universe and apparently survived the two subsequent mutations of reality. Grace's original role was to identify potential rebels against Darkseid's rule by preaching revolt and pretending to be a kindred spirit, then aiding in the apprehension and punishment of those who were identified by her ruse as subversives. She once seduced Superman into believing he was Darkseid's son in an effort to neutralize his threat to her master's agenda, but her spell was broken and her plan thwarted with the help of Orion. Grace's mind-manipulating powers were the same as those of her brother, Glorious Godfrey. That's in Superman Volume 2, Number 3, March 1987, and The Adventures of Superman, Number 426, March 1987, and others. Amazo. While the android dubbed Amazo was best known for its many battles with the founding members of the Justice League of America, among whom was Superman, Amazo and the Man of Steel squared off in a few one-on-one battles prior to the Crisis on Infinite Earths. Amazo's primary ability was to replicate the powers of the metahumans it battled, though super people were not referred to by that term at the time. Because Superman was generally considered the old Earth One's most powerful hero, he was arguably Amazo's most formidable opponent. Amazo was built by the cyberneticist Anthony Ivo, who in his youth developed a pathological fear of death, with the result that he devoted the rest of his life to achieving immortality. This, he thought, could be accomplished by infusing himself with the same unknown kinds of energy expended by metahumans. The resulting android was, in a sense, an animate battery in humanoid form. Amazo was powered by Ivo's absorption cells, which permitted the android to absorb and replicate the unique energy of any metahumans with whom it interacted. Thus, the android became even more powerful with every superhero it encountered, as it continued to amass an array of powers greater than those of any one hero. That's in The Brave and the Bold, Volume 1, Number 30, May/June 1960. Once captured, Amazo proved difficult to contain, on one occasion escaping even from an airtight chamber within Superman's Fortress of Solitude. The Man of Steel and the Amazing Android had several one-on-one confrontations that proved terrific tests of the hero's fortitude. That's in Action Comics Number 480 through 483, February through May 1978, and others. No documentation ever existed to verify whether there was one Amazo or many. It was theorized, however, that Ivo built several, which would account for the android's many reappearances after having been utterly destroyed at times when Ivo could not have built another one. Although both Amazo and his creator reappeared in the post-First Crisis Unified Earth, over the years Amazo evolved beyond its original programming. While its own sentience exhibited no drive to dominate humankind, Amazo continued to be regarded as a monstrosity whose existence itself was threatening. The Amazons. The Amazons were female humanoid beings formed from clay given life by five Olympian goddesses, Artemis, Athena, Demeter, Hestia, and Aphrodite, who used Earthian figures as vessels in which to reincarnate the souls of women murdered by men more than 3,000 years ago. The Amazon's mission in life was to show the men of Patriarch's world the power of love and equality. The immortal Amazons inhabited the island of Themyscira, birthplace of Wonder Woman, Superman's Justice League of America colleague and occasional romantic interest in the earliest days of the post-Crisis universe. Themyscira was known on both Earth 1 and Earth 2 of the pre-Crisis universe as Paradise Island. For a detailed account of the Amazons, please consult the Essential Wonder Woman Encyclopedia, 2010. Let's head on over to the Metropolis mailbag, shall we? We have an email from Mr. Dave McElveny, and he writes in again and says, "Greetings, Mario. Well, it sounds as if your senior year of college is starting off well. I hope you enjoy your classes. They sound like fun learning opportunities. I thought your take on Superman for All Seasons, Winter, was very much on the money. It was interesting to hear you relating your own thoughts on your approaching graduation and heading out on your own to a home and place of your own, to Pete Ross's anger at Clark and Lana for returning to Smallville after having been out in the wider world. I think because he stayed in Smallville, he sees his life going along the lines you described as, nothing would change and suddenly I'd be 55. He's mad at himself for his choice, and he's mad at Lana and Clark because they'd escaped and yet willingly returned. I also like your idea that Clark faces the temptation of staying in Smallville and settling into a kind of life he might have had if he had been just Clark Kent, ordinary farm boy. With all the responsibility of being Superman, the seemingly less burdened normal life might well have its appeal. Of course, he knows his responsibility and takes it up again, and deep down, as the son of Jonathan and Martha Kent, he must know that there are burdens and responsibilities of a normal life, too. As for the recurring, with slight variations, scenes of Clark at different points in his life sitting in his room, I think it's Tim Sale's way of saying that Clark is, at his core, the same person throughout his life. I could be wrong, but that's my two cents. Your coverage of The Stolen Costume was quite good. It is an excellent episode of the TV show, I think. I can only imagine Candy Meyer's frustration when Clark asks him to find something that was stolen, but won't tell him what it was. I, myself, didn't find out that Candy Meyer was a recurring character on the old Superman radio program until I was an adult, and that made me feel for him even more because he was frequently frustrated by Clark's secret identity shenanigans. As for the deaths at the end of the episode, I don't think we can lay all of the responsibility on the criminals themselves. They had no real reason to believe that Superman really would return with food and or supplies. If they'd been in his place, they probably would have left their enemies marooned alone on that mountain with no help. Also, if you tell people, don't try to climb down, what's the first thing people will do? They'll try to climb down. I chalk their deaths up to a kind of golden age Superman justice. Thanks, as always, for a fun podcast. Live long and prosper, Dave McElveny. Thanks for writing in, Dave. I agree with you on that last bit regarding the deaths. It makes more sense if you just kind of think of it as a golden age sort of thing. And from what I get, that's kind of the tone that they were going for with these. It's less Silver Age. I mean, we get some more goofy Silver Age type stories as the series progresses, but a lot of these are, they feel very golden age in nature, which I'm always down for. I love the golden age. Of course, Superman isn't always the rough and tough, ready to brawl kind of devil may care character that he was in the first few years of Action Comics and Superman. He became a little bit lighter, as we all know, and but yeah, it seems like that's kind of the tone they went for. He was still a very caring guy, but he was also a no-nonsense sort of fellow, which I really dig. So this episode's super fact, it's the Bizarro Code, and I wouldn't feel right saying it, so I'm going to let my buddy here, Bizarro, take care of this one.
Us do opposite of all earthly things. Us hate beauty. Us love ugliness. It is big crime to make anything perfect on Bizarro World.
And for this episode's super quote, it comes from Action Comics number 775, What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, and the American Way. This is from Superman himself. I know there are bad men in power, and the world is not an equitable place. But you can't throw morality in the garbage just because life's tough. You want to do the honors, Bizarro?
Good morning, folks.
Up, up, and away!
I swear to you, believe me when I told you that I was Superman. With you, I could even fool myself. We've been friends since we were 12. Now I'll be 17 on the 24th. Pulse for 5 years on my shirt. I counted seasons till the fall when I would steal your heart. You left the scene before my crime. I think about you when I'm sick and tired of stupid girls. I think about you all the time. I'm Superman with you. Too many times, lit a match to watch it burn. You keep me waiting longer every day, but still I'm here. The more you live, the less I learn. I am Superman with you. I'm Superman with you. Oh, come on. You know you're my hero too. Oh, you might sound like a lie, but I know. Superman with you. Oh, come on, you're my hero too. Oh, it might sound like a lie, but I know if you know, Superman can fly.
For more Up, Up, and Away, visit www.upupandaway.podomatic.com. The show and other Superman-related goodies can be found on Facebook by searching Up, Up, and Away Podcast, and Mario can be contacted through email at mbenesi94@yahoo.com. That's B as in boy, E-N-N-E-S-E. Up, Up, and Away is a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, and Superman and all related images are property of DC Comics and Warner Brothers Entertainment. All images and music are property of their respective owners, and no infringement is intended. This is a non-profit fan podcast. Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.